You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the China Shop. I'm shopkeeper Dan, and with me as always is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. Kyle's celebrating a big promotion today. He's the new Scrooge McDuck impersonator here in the shop. How you doing today, Kyle?
That actually sounds quite apt. I'll take that one.
I thought it might. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So does that make you Launchpad McQuack?
Yes, it does.
All right.
Oh, I'm so glad you caught the setup. I did not share that with Kyle ahead of time, but that was what I was hoping for. I love Launchpad. Anyway.
Yeah.
We got to come on into the shop with us today, folks. We got a great episode. Got a great interview coming up. Sit back, relax, hedge against the rage machine. We'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here to smash our way into a complete set of fine china, sharing our growing strategies for maximizing gains and cutting our losses. But these interview episodes, we like to take deep dives into single topics, and that's what you've shown up for. So strap in.
Because we're going to get some goddamn answers.
We're going to get some goddamn crypto answers. We've got Alex Greengard, one of my personal friends, who also happens to be a professor-level educator. Alex, how are you doing today?
Oh my goodness, hello. That was a very kind introduction.
Yeah, better than mine.
Well, yeah, we got to be nice to guests. We got to be nice, right?
It's understandable.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to be here and having a good day.
Fantastic. I know Kyle's got the ever burning question that we ask everybody on deck. But before that, how did you get started in crypto? Uh-huh.
So I found myself a lurker on Wall Street Bets and really interested in gamma squeezes, for example, and also weary of stocks, not because I think it's unsafe, but just because the nature of the investment, I think, is investing in a company. It doesn't have to be a Fortune 500 company. It sometimes it is, and something felt a little icky about that for me. But once finance started becoming more democratized with, I mean, let's say it, meme stocks.
I thought you were going to say Robinhood. I was going to shoo you out the door.
Oh, yeah, no.
Robinhood's dead to us.
No, I'm a listener. I'm aware. Actually, maybe that's part of the weariness, is that often a company will present itself superficially as a Robin Hood figure, you know, and you don't always know. So there's some, right, with some weariness, but I really wanted to start to play. And I also this was about a year or two ago, starting to get more aggressive with my student loans. I wanted to speed up the process a little bit, to kind of cut the corners of just like saving and living small and skipping going out to eat, you know, everything the Chase Bank Twitter says to do.
Oh, you mean paying them off? I was getting nervous for you.
I know. They don't want me to skip going out to eat either. They just, right. Yeah. So crypto was always a scary thought. Just doing anything besides saving money in a savings account was always a scary thought for me, even though I have a pension that's actually really aggressive in the market. It's just, I have no control over it. It automatically takes 11% and then the company matches, which is lovely. I can't touch that money, but they do a whole bunch of aggressive stuff to my money to try and grow it. In any case, I started dipping my toes in the crypto waters and eventually started getting into some day trading for fun. I would allocate an amount of my portfolio for some fun trades and then some more longs. Crypto is super volatile. And as I got more into it, I discovered there are all these interesting spaces that I was able to learn about. And I was able to discover this whole new world of finance that's I was going to say unregulated. A lot of it is unregulated or regulated right. in a strange way, right? Like taxed as a property rather than as a currency.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Wow.
And then also much of crypto behaves as a security. So it's a very strange space anyway when it comes to regulation. And yeah, but when I was, the un was un or decentralized. That's the one I was looking for. Not yeah. dependent on a central entity to exist. And that got me going as a sort of person that's interested in the fringe, a person that's interested in doing things independently of major institutions. So that's where I started the research. Yeah. And now I've sort of become a amateur expert of the DeFi ecosystem.
Well, those are our favorite kind of experts.
I know, right? So what's the benefit of being decentralized then? Like I hear people talk about that, touting that as a big plus.
Right now, same as solar, it's a feel-good benefit.
Okay.
Okay. Well said. Well said.
Starting very recently, you can reap some actual monetary benefits. For example, if I would like to use Ally Bank as my savings account, that's they're able to offer really great rates with USD savings accounts because they don't have brick and mortar locations. Mm-hmm. And those really good rates, let's have a look at the Ally website to see what they'd like to offer. I know my checking account I actually do have an Ally account. But that's because in crypto, you need to have a few accounts because right. certain banks will do certain things.
And also good savings rates with banks are relative.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Online savings. Let's see if there's a quick way of getting a number here. Otherwise, I'll just give up on it. But I get paid 0.1% for my checking at Ally. Here we go. Annual percentage yield, 0.5%.
Wow.
0.5%.
Pretty good for a savings account, actually.
Round of applause. And you could take the money away anytime. The only thing in a savings account that keeps the money in there is that it's called a savings account. And so that disincentivizes the very squishy human emotion of taking money out of there. But you can take money out of a savings account anytime right. you want. Mm-hmm. It's just called a savings account, so you don't. And you want those sweet, sweet 0.5% yearly gains. Yum.
Yeah.
But as you guys know, an index fund is a really nice savings account. Mm-hmm. It's another financial space. So within crypto, in a decentralized space, instead of letting Ally, the company, be a middleman to decide what the rates are, decide how they're going to use that liquidity pool, in DeFi, you can have a protocol that does that, a computer program, and those will give you better rates. I'll type in one of the most popular ones right now on my screen, compound.finance. And click on markets here, and the best they'll offer automatically is right now 2.52%.
Wow, yeah, that's much better. Compound, okay, I think I have some of their tokens.
Yes, so that means that those are governance tokens, so you actually can, you got them on Coinbase Learn, didn't you?
Yep, got a lot of free stuff on there.
I know, it's like, here's 30 bucks.
And I've learned nothing. I actually, what I did learn is I can skip the video and just go right to the question, because usually it's answered in the first slide.
Okay.
I soaked those up. It's so exciting for me to learn about these different spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, DAI is a stable coin. We'll get into that, I promise. But basically, it's one for one tied to the U.S. dollar. So it's we're not talking about 2.5% on a potentially volatile security that could crash at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about just automatically a computer program. No middle person will give you 2.5% on those stable coins. But just within crypto, there are middle persons who will give you a lot of interest in order to stake or put your money in a liquidity pool. They'll use it just like a bank. And so right now, let's see, Celsius is giving 8.88% on stable coins. BlockFi is giving 8.6%. And CoinLoan out of, it's European, Estonia.
Yes, where I like to park my money.
But that's the thing. It's cryptocurrency. If it's on a database, it's on a database.
Doesn't matter, right?
They'll give you 10.3%.
God damn, that's actually like the rate of the average market.
Yeah, but you get to be detached from it. You don't have to worry about if things move with it. And then the other thing is it's easy to get the money out and turn it back into cash.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quick and easy can you turn it back into cash without, because unlike a security, you're not necessarily selling it to a party, you're selling it to an exchange.
Right.
It's a different institution.
We have just dove into the deeper side of the pool.
Sorry, yeah, I know. I got into the weeds.
Let me pull myself along the edge back to the shallow end.
All right, you got it.
What is cryptocurrency?
Okay, there we go. All the way back. Toes in the water.
Yes,
we can edit this to the beginning too if we want to keep the flow right.
Oh no, I think that's a funny bit.
Okay, all right, we can leave it.
All right. So a cryptocurrency is a digital currency that does not have a central bank or a single administrator that oversees the transactions. The transactions can be sent peer-to-peer via a network. A network and a protocol oversees the transactions instead.
And the protocol, is that the blockchain that I hear everyone mention?
In this case, sure, yes. The blockchain is the... almost all of these cryptocurrency networks use a blockchain, a digital ledger, in order to be the automatic programmed custodian of these mm-hmm. transactions, to oversee them and confirm them. But you can do peer-to-peer. So I could send you Bitcoin. More likely, if you're a Bitcoin holder or any kind of cryptocurrency holder, you're going to probably send from one wallet to another for various mm-hmm. reasons. Maybe you're hunting the best interest rates for these other third-party institutions that'll pay you interest in order to basically put it in their savings account. Maybe you're taking it from the exchange that you bought it from, because they'll give you a wallet and like Coinbase, and then you're going to send it to your cold storage wallet so that it's not, the wallet isn't on the internet. The data is now on your USB drive.
Mm-hmm.
So that means a Bitcoin or an Ethereum coin is a file that I could have on my computer.
Sort of. I would describe it more as data on a data table. It's numbers on it. But I mean, I guess that's what a file is too.
Yeah.
At its heart. So what I'm saying is, difference between a hot and cold wallet. Are we talking like, okay, I've taken the data table and I've stored it on this hard drive. Nobody else can take that data table off.
That's right. I mean, nobody can in a hot wallet either, that aka a wallet that's stored on a server on the internet, because it's encrypted by a key of 30 or so actual words. And it turns out that is, we think, impossible. It hasn't been proven to be possible for brute force to crack. Yeah.
But near impossible to crack. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yes, that would be a cold storage, would be the data table is there. However, the record of the transaction, of every single transaction, is kept on the blockchain, which is the online ledger of all transactions. It's just that instead of Dan Leeson, it'll be your wallet address, which is a series of numbers and letters.
Okay. I think I'm starting to understand. Kyle, are you following this?
I think so, but I still want to know how to even make it. Like, I want to know the process. How did it come about?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a really natural question. How is it created?
Yes.
So this is kind of interesting. There was initially in the first block of the blockchain, what we call the Genesis block. There were, let's say we're talking about Bitcoin. That's the one that makes the most sense to talk about in this context. There were a number of Bitcoins already there. Then new Bitcoins are created when and every time there are transactions. In fact, the technology that prevents double spending, which is the initial problem with digital currency in the first place, mm-hmm. the problem that nobody could solve until Satoshi Nakamoto, the anonymous creator, we don't know who that is, but we know it's Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yes.
solved it. And it's interesting, it's a very human solution, which is that we create currency, a new currency, in the transactions themselves. A certain number of transactions add up to a block. It's just a number an arbitrary number of transactions. And when what we call miners confirm the transaction, new coins are created and given to the first miner to confirm the transaction. With Bitcoin, you need three confirmations on the network to get the money from one wallet to another.
Why does that keep getting harder and harder then? It seems like if you're just confirming transactions, you should be, or is it just because there's so many more of them as you create more Bitcoin?
Yes, exactly that. And one other thing, which is that over time, the reward halves every so often and continues to get half smaller. So there was a time at which a lot of Bitcoins were being created, and now it's much, much slower. Most of the Bitcoins will be mined by 2024, but technically all of them won't be mined for another 120 years.
Oh, because there's just going to be such a smaller and smaller increment.
So these transactions, like if I'm a Bitcoin miner, I'm using my computer to what, sort through the data of every time a Bitcoin has changed hands?
Sort of. So a transaction is sent to the Bitcoin network. And the transaction is a very simple XYZ. X person sends Y dollars to Z other person. So it's that peer-to-peer. That information is sent to the blockchain, and then the transaction needs to be confirmed. Your computer, hopefully a supercomputer, will start the confirmation process, and then in the middle of the confirmation process, it has to solve a complex math problem. And then it can finish, once it does, it can finish the confirmation process. The fastest computer to solve it wins. And so that's why you need supercomputers and power in order to mine Bitcoin.
And what's the point of the math problem thrown in there? Is it just for the hell of it? Or is it to slow everything down?
Yeah. Where do the math problems come from? Where do they come from?
It creates a proof of work. And that is there. It's there to create an incentive system for miners and a competition system for miners. The fastest computer you're going to need to is going to expend more energy. It's going to be more powerful. This is why a lot of people are stringing together a bunch of
GPUs.
Yeah. Instead of getting a big, powerful CPU, because they can generate more computing power that way for their mining rigs. But yeah, it proves the computer did the work, and this is a defense against the double spending problem because it basically is energy, right? It kind of boils down to energy spent to create the transaction and prove and confirm it. I don't know if that was a good answer to your question, why is the fastest one? That's so that to create an incentive structure for miners.
Right.
Okay, but like the math problems in and of themselves, is that like work some mathematician is trying to get done and he's like, put this into the computer?
Oh, no. No, it's actually very simple math problems. It's just ones that require algorithms, and the faster processors process them faster. It's literally busy work.
Just to prove that you actually did what the blockchain was expecting you to
exactly.
do.
Exactly, yes.
I think this Nagatoshi guy must have been a teacher, because that sounds like every math teacher I ever had. Show your work. Show your work.
Right, they've been looking in the wrong places. Yeah. They need to start.
All right, so Bitcoin was definitely the first. It's the one that exploded first, and it looks like Ethereum is starting to kind of catch up. What makes the different protocols or different cryptos, what makes them actually different?
Well, that's a really interesting question. One of the differences actually is how do you create proof within your transaction? How do you create cryptographic zero knowledge proof? One of them is proof of work, which is what we just described, that proves that the computer, that computational effort has been expended. But another method that actually is more environmentally friendly, although let me be clear, my position on, oh no, Bitcoin isn't green, is it's greener than a bank, which has a physical building and a vault, and
it's greener than a Tesla.
Yeah.
So the other, and this is an up-and-coming cryptographic zero-knowledge proof strategy, is proof of stake, which it basically, you hold on to a bunch of money on the network, but you can't take it out, just like a CD, for example, in a bank. And it can create consensus on the blockchain and validation, unlike proof of work, based on your stake, how much you can be a validator if you have a large stake already.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've also seen that there's a lot of cryptos on, when I was looking through Coinbase, that use the Ethereum. They use something with the Ethereum where they're kind of like, it looks like they're building off of their infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's actually back to your original question that I never got to because I was describing proof of stake. yes, Ethereum is not only the big other cryptocurrency, but Ethereum is the, I don't want to say first because I'm not 100% sure. I think it is the first programmable network. So whereas the blockchain that Bitcoin uses for its network is a ledger. Mm-hmm. The network of Ethereum can actually run programs. It's programmable money. And so you can run programs that we call protocols that can replicate financial institutions right there on the Ethereum network. And it's because the Ethereum network has this capability called smart contracts, a transaction protocol intended to automatically execute, control, or document legally relevant events and actions according to the terms of a contract or agreement.
And now, what is the benefit of all of this? Like, why is it important or why is it valuable? Let's start with that.
Well, the Ethereum network enables you to, through smart contracts, write an algorithm that is a financial, that takes the place of a financial institution. It creates this DeFi landscape. As of now, mm-hmm. the three biggest protocols that replace traditional financial institutions are lending protocols, so banks, a staking pool with lenders and borrowers, DEXs, which are decentralized exchanges, and then this is a kind of a fun one, yield farms, which are like automatic robot mutual fund managers. They'll scour through all of the different lending protocols and put your money in the one that's currently paying the highest interest rate, because the interest rates automatically fluctuate based on how many borrowers and lenders are in the pool, and then also based on the votes of owners of the governance tokens. Like, you're the owner of a Compound governance token, so you can vote on changes to the Compound protocol.
Right.
I hope you studied your computer programming skills, Kyle. Make some informed decisions.
It's been a while. It has been a while. Good thing I only have like $3 worth. Actually, that one might have given me 7 or 10. I don't remember. Yeah, they're kind of random with the numbers they give out.
Okay, so we're talking about these, for all intents and purposes, a token is like a file that's been BitTorrented, or at the very least, its record is on a data table that is BitTorrented across the world. So it's the decentralized data table. So it's hard to get on it and screw it over.
Yeah, although all of the nodes have the whole blockchain, it usually takes a little bit to justify them all together. But yes, they're spread out on lots and lots and lots of computers all over the world. You'll never shut down or the Bitcoin network.
And then, so you can go from there to each of these coins inside themselves, or each of certain, maybe like an Ethereum token, is its own programmable protocol inside the token. It is the token.
A lot of cryptocurrencies, this is what you were getting at, Kyle, a second ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of cryptocurrencies are what are called ERC-20 tokens on the Ethereum network. They are, in and of themselves, their own currency, their own, with their own valuation, their own fluctuation in value, and yet their native state is as a token on the Ethereum network. That's possible because it can process smart contracts.
So are their values tied to the Ethereum value then, or are they completely independent?
Both. They're completely independent, but they're tied in so much as many, many cryptos are psychologically tied to Bitcoin and Ethereum, which only every once in a while depart from each other in their chart patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, if your Compound tokens are ERC-20 tokens.
Right.
And so if Ethereum takes a dump, you could expect your tokens that are completely on the Ethereum network
right
to dump in synchrony.
insipid.
We're here with you.
Which we've seen that pretty recently, I think, with Elon Musk attacking Bitcoin. I think he pretty much tanked everything except for the...
Oh, he just tweeted again to boost Bitcoin. He's now a Bitcoin booster, and it went up above 40 grand.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to make our villain list here now.
Yeah, he's a manipulator for sure. We can't seem to figure out what he's up to, because he probably knew. It seems like it makes sense that he knew that Bitcoin's proof of work system expended some energy. more energy than Cardano. But not more energy than Dogecoin, which is what drives me nuts about all that. It's like the only thing anyone can figure out from that behavior, other than he's literally is just being a villain and playing, is that he wanted to pump Dogecoin. Although, remember how I said that every transaction in every wallet is tracked on the blockchain? That means you can look at the wallets with the most money in them. There is a wallet that buys a lot of Bitcoin in amounts that are equal to Elon Musk's birthday, and also buys a lot of Bitcoin in amounts of 4/20/69.
Oh, God. That's a Reddit thing.
But it's a big one, and that wallet, when it sold a bunch, and then Elon Musk did those tweets, and then Bitcoin crashed, and then it bought a bunch. So think what you will.
Yeah, okay. That's shady. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if you were Elon Musk and you could do it, what's to stop you?
Nothing. Right now, nothing.
But he doesn't care about money. I mean, he said that specifically.
Oh, he did say that. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
What did he say he does care about? The children?
Engineering. Or something like that.
Yeah. The future of humanity? Something like that?
The baby robots.
The baby robots.
Yeah. The baby robots.
Thank you for the nightmares.
Okay. So back on track here. Now, I think I've got a little bit of a grasp on people are trading these tokens, and it's just data on data tables. But you've also broached the subject of somehow using this as a banking system where you can be part of either side of the banking system. If you want to earn interest in a savings account, you can do that. But what else is in there? Let's dive into the I think you call them stable coins.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. A stablecoin is a cryptocurrency that's value is tied to the value of the dollar. And there have been a couple of strategies to try and keep it there, because as you've probably noticed, cryptocurrency valuations are volatile. So to pin the value to a dollar, one thing you can do is back them with real dollars. And so that's what Coinbase does with its ERC-20 token called USDC. And it's a very popular stable coin that has so far succeeded in staying at the value of a dollar, even though a lot of crypto has seen big rises and big falls. Mm. Tether is another really popular one, and DAI, D-A-I, named after one of the original computer scientists, to figure out some of the fundamental problems of crypto. Those are probably the biggest, most popular stable coins. And stable coins are very useful because you can do crypto things, right? You can participate in decentralized finance. You can get in on really good interest rates from liquidity pools, whether they're institutional or decentralized. Mm-hmm. But without the risk of, oh no, the value of the currency is dropping. It's tied to a dollar. So it gives you this space. Yeah.
Which may not be the best one to tie to right now, but.
Yeah, that's actually a good point too.
Yeah. Don't mean to derail us, but...
No, yeah. But yeah, there are stablecoins that are connected to other currencies as well, and other commodities as well, like gold, for example. So Pax Gold.
The LODE token we talked to somebody about. Yeah.
Yeah, Nick Broughton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can... If you have a bunch of gold, you could make that many gold-backed stablecoins tied to it. So that's... And a lot of these companies are... Oh, so Gemini has a dollar. Oh, I love an opportunity to talk about Gemini, because they're an exchange. They're the bread and butter of the Winklevoss twins. And I love that they called it Gemini. I find that to be just so cute.
Can we go back to the gold coins again? If you have that much gold, why don't you just make coins out of gold?
Like gold coins?
Yeah. That's, get rid of all the computer part. No, there's no ledger. You can just give it to whoever you want.
I've heard people do that.
I've seen them at the pawn shops. They're real.
Well, cryptocurrency gives you some advantages, I think. There's reasons people use it. It gives you the advantage of being able to cash it out without a buyer, mm-hmm. because as a currency, you've got these major exchanges that'll buy anything from you. Well, not anything. They won't buy your moon token or whatever. Because there's a lot of, but they'll, yeah, they'll buy all the major ones from you, right. And then you can cash it out really quickly. And also participating in these huge interest rate staking pools. I honestly think that's the biggest incentive.
Yeah, that's what I need to look into that a lot more. That's actually the most compelling reason I've heard from talking to any of our guests about crypto, about what gives it any value.
Yeah. I mean, BlockFi is an institutionally backed, lending pool, and mm-hmm. You can set up an account. You can very easily convert your fiat money into stable coins if you want, or a handful of other, and they'll pay you 8.6%. And they're this like big company that can prove their backing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a safe bet. Of course, anytime you're in crypto, you're not talking about being backed by the FDIC.
Right.
So it's the strength of the institution. If you're going institutional, and if you're not, then I guess your trust is in the strength of the coin itself.
Yeah, you don't have that safety net. If my broker goes bankrupt, I'm insured up to $250,000, or the same like a bank would. Mm-hmm. So you don't have that when you don't have an institution behind it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly. And that's why these institutions are attractive. It turns out that like right this second, DeFi, the top DeFi lenders are offering in the 2-3%, and some of these institutional crypto groups are offering in the 8-10% zone. A lot of them will make their money. Oh, this is a fun one. They'll create an incentive system within their institution. So they'll create a token, and then they'll say, hey, we'll give you 8% for your stable coins to participate. We'll give you 12% for your stable coins if 10% of your portfolio is our little token that we made.
Oh wow.
To try to encourage more buyers.
Yeah. So you've got a proof of stake within a proof of stake.
Nice.
<That's> clever.
Nice.
And then you hold it there so that you get those interest rates. It's pretty genius. It's a lot of cryptocurrency can make use of human incentive systems in order to store mm-hmm. value, which is, I think, just super cool.
But in order to have value, it has to be adopted by the more people that adopt it, then the more value it's going to hold is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I would say generally that is true.
Okay. So that's why Bitcoin is the king on the block, because it's been around the longest, mm-hmm. has the most publicity.
And the biggest market cap too.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense. I think I'm picking up on it. So you started talking about a strategy that you're starting to get into when you were perusing the filth that is Wall Street Bets. Mm-hmm. You want to jump back over to that now that we've gotten 40 minutes of background information?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me personally, I'm not really into I don't really do the strategy thing. I just make use of mm-hmm. I look around for which institutions are offering the most, and then I just move my stable coins around to the ones that are offering the most. So right now, my money is in Estonia for that sweet 10.3%. But if Celsius, who's created by Alex Mashinsky, who lives in New York, but I think the money is in Denmark. If Celsius wants to play ball and offer 10% again, I'll just put my money back there, because I like they'll put your interest in your account weekly.
Oh yeah.
Nexo will put the interest in your account daily.
That 10%, is that annual yield?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just did the math on weekly 10%, and
yeah, I was gonna say that'd be amazing.
Sold.
I just moved mine right now.
Yeah, and then this one's kind of fun. If you go back to DeFi, the compound protocol with that 2%, it is compounded. It's a yearly yield, but it's compounded every time a new Ethereum block clears on the blockchain, which is every 13 seconds.
Wow.
So you can literally open a browser window and just watch your money grow in real time.
Like watching your stock go up.
Yes. How did you find that?
Compound? Because I watched the video on Coinbase.
I watched the first ones. I just didn't understand it. I'm a good test taker, so I know, ooh, that's probably the question.
The Reddit cryptocurrency community, which largely is an echo chamber bullying each other to hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Been there.
Little pockets of really interesting information. And that I read a great post one day, like, you know, you can give a man a steak or you can teach a man to stake. And I was like, oh, that's cute wordplay. What is staking? And it's like, yeah, you just put your money in a protocol and allow other people to borrow it while it's in there. And you get paid an interest on those loans. Oh, by the way, one of the reasons that these interest rates are high is because of the nature of taxation of cryptocurrency. And this might be true for securities too, but for sure for cryptocurrency. Let's say you want to participate in, oh, wow, Elon Musk did a tweet and now Bitcoin's on the rise and I would like to participate, but I'm out of fiat, or there's a number of reasons I can't do it. Or I already have a bunch of Bitcoin. And that's why I don't want to. So you buy it on margin. But within crypto, you buy it on margin, you make gains, and you sell only what you bought on margin. You're not taxed for that.
Oh.
You're only taxed when you sell the cryptocurrency.
Huh. What?
So taking advantage of a lending pool gives you the leeway to... Now, getting margin called, in crypto, we call it liquidation. And you will, just because of the nature of how it works with collateralization, you do lose everything if it goes down. And it's almost like it could go down by 10, a tenth of a point, and they have every right to liquidate. So what they'll do is they'll cover the loss, and then anything else is just disappears from your account. It's just gone. So
okay, that's the downside of not being centralized.
Exchanges do it too, though. That offer margin, and they offer this.
Oh, but they won't. They won't take everything. They'll force liquidation, but they will not. I mean, they'll sell whatever at whatever price to cover whatever you owe. Yeah.
But like if you borrowed at 120 leverage, mm-hmm. you know, 150 leverage, and it goes down by 5 points, it's not that like they took it. It's just gone. It has disappeared.
Yeah, but oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the brokerage, you can only leverage a 50% rate.
People are people get 10x leverage regularly in the crypto space.
Sounds like a hedge fund.
It sounds. It sounds too risky for my tastes. But
yeah, that's me too.
There's a great advantage in that those leveraged buys are, you can make money tax free, which is cool.
And I guess if you're only put $100 in the account, I mean, win 1,000 or lose 100. Okay. I'm guessing they're not coming after you for the rest of it.
If you want to like recoup your loss or not recoup your loss, if you want to take profits, then that's mm-hmm. a taxable event. Even if you just want to convert to a stable coin, it's a taxable event.
Okay. So even conversion from one thing to another then.
Yeah. And then the interest is taxed as income.
Mm-hmm.
Just the interest.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're doing interest stuff, that's taxed as income.
Now, if you hold Bitcoin for over a year or another crypto for over a year, does it fall under capital gains tax rates like securities do?
Yeah, exactly. So you've got your short and your long capital gains taxation. Yeah. So that is the same. But I think the rates are different because it's property. It's as property.
Yeah, that's so weird. It's electronic. It's not real.
Yeah. I mean, that gets us. I hate to be, you bring a crypto guy on and he tells you that your actual money isn't real either, right? I hate to, but.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know. But. Yeah. I don't mean real like that. I mean, like it's not tangible. You can't hold it.
Like this,
it's like a file on a computer.
Gold coins. Well, I'm actually glad you asked that question since your new promotion to Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes.
It's like what I really want to talk about is gold coins. Just compelled to speak on them.
Just so you know, I am not a gold fan. I do not invest in gold or precious metals, really.
We have a friend who likes gold, Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Sage was, or his dad was really big into it when we were kids, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. I know my uncle was nuts about gold.
Yeah.
It's all through the 90s. he was putting every dollar he got in actual physical gold coins.
Have you looked at the price since the 90s?
Oh, yeah. No, my uncle's doing great. Yeah, he's just fine. Last time I talked to him, he was lamenting that he didn't have enough money to buy a summer house in Amsterdam. So he's doing okay.
That's a bullish sign.
I don't think gold's gone up that much, though, has it?
I mean, it still behaves deflationary, right? Like,
I'm saying if you would have bought the SPY, I think you'd have done a lot better.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he would have. But he did it like as a doomsday prepper, like society will fall and I'll have all the gold.
Yeah, if society falls, I want bullets, not gold.
Yeah.
You can get crypto bullets. That's a lie. I am kidding. I was
just about to be sold. you make some great points with the interest-bearing nature of it. I think it's definitely something worth checking out. And I think it's the best use case I've heard, or the best justification for some of the value some of these things hold.
Yeah. And then there's also, you can have your cake and eat it too, because BlockFi, for example, and by the way, I only have 55 cents in my BlockFi account, so I'm not shilling for BlockFi. Although I am waiting for them to move me up on the waiting list for their BlockFi Rewards credit card, where you get cash back in the form of Bitcoin. So you can move me up on the waiting list if you like.
I thought you were going to start pumping pancake swap because you have your cake and eat it too.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. That is a decentralized exchange.
It's a decentralized joke.
There's a lot of funny things out there. Anyway, yeah, BlockFi will pay you 5% interest for your Bitcoin. So you can have this, like, you can dollar cost average Bitcoin as if you believe it to be a rising, I keep wanting to say security, but asset.
Yeah.
And there's good reason to believe that it will be, because it has a fixed amount, because it's being institutionally adopted, and because it's a good digital store of value. It offers you peer to peer. I'm giving you by the way more use cases.
Well, you've left out one of the most impressive things about it too, and that's just the longevity. I mean, when did it first pop up?
It was created in 2008. The network came up in 2009.
So it's been around for 12 years, and it's not a fad at this point anymore. You can't, it's not a beanie baby. I used to think, I likened NFTs to digital beanie babies, but cryptocurrency definitely does not fall into that anymore. You can't make that claim, I don't think.
I think it's an asset class, and I think we see that when we see like JP Morgan adding it as an asset class that their investors can choose to buy now.
Oh, they're making a new 401k too, I think we just found.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for Bitcoin?
For crypto. I think it's just a crypto 401k where you can just throw money in there and then invest in cryptos instead of stocks or mutual funds or any of the other different things.
Hmm.
That was a conversation I had where you weren't there on the last episode.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. I'm remembering now.
Yeah.
I'm remembering. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Thank you.
I think the permissionless transactions that are automatically confirmed via an incentive system that prevents it from being hacked is really cool.
Yeah.
Now, I think Bitcoin is obviously a lot more volatile than a US dollar, but I think it's more secure. And I just think it's really special that everything is on the blockchain for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. It's safe because it's out in the open, because everything is out in the open, which is why all the FUD articles about there's money laundering with Bitcoin. Well, that's terrible money laundering. You want a record of every transaction? It's awful money laundering.
Oh, that's a good
point. You're not doing your job right at all.
What's the opposite of laundering? It's just getting money dirty.
Money dirtying.
You right, Dan?
Yeah, drank some water, went down the wrong pipe. I'm sorry.
Ew.
I have a very weak epiglottal muscle.
Oh, okay. You meant your throat.
Yes.
I think that's the right hole.
Well, not when your epiglottal muscle pushes it over into your lungs instead of your stomach or esophagus.
Never mind. Digression.
As a teacher, I will pretend that you did not make that joke that you made, Kyle.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody understood it.
I
just didn't.
I am like a child confused wandering into the movie theater halfway through.
I think a lot of people feel like that with cryptocurrencies, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of happened, exploded, and then nobody knows what the hell it is still, or half the people don't.
I do think that a lot of holders of cryptocurrencies, of Bitcoin, don't understand what it is that they're holding. I also think there are a lot of people who will hold or die.
Mm-hmm.
and not take profits when obviously things are, you know, heading down, and they just like refuse to take profits because they, you know, believe in it or whatever.
If you're treating it as a like a 20-year hold, then you don't try to time it. I mean, that's conventional wisdom, is you just keep adding whenever you can.
Yeah.
And you never sell.
And DCA works with the big cryptos for sure. Any way of passively doing it, if you wanted to set up your Coinbase account to just take $200 a month or whatever, that tends to be, it's not the most effective way, but it's a really good way to close your eyes and make money.
Sounds like the best way is to put it in one of those 10% yields and just let it sit there for 20 years.
I have found that to be ultimately where I landed.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be 20 years that they're offering that rate. So I'm kind of doing the shuffle back and forth of whoever's got the highest rate that also has insurance.
Well, didn't you say there's already a protocol that will do that for you?
Yeah. Yield Farms. I haven't gotten into them. They're, I don't understand everything. Yearn Finance is right now the biggest yield farm. I don't understand everything that's going on there, how their governance tokens work, how they move the money around. So I haven't experimented there yet. I have experimented on the Compound Protocol and a couple of other ones, Maker, Aave, Flexa, because the Coinbase just gave some AMP. So I tried Flexa out.
Yep, I got some AMP too.
So yeah, you could stake it and make, you know, like 1.5% or so,
right,
on that $3.
Well, Alex, actually, I'm happy to see that you know all these different terms, because that plays right into the game that I was going to suggest for you that I cooked up.
Yes.
Oh goodness.
So, Dan, do you have your Discord open?
I'm opening it right now.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give Dan the name of a crypto, and he's going to try to make you guess which crypto it is without being able to say the name of it.
Oh.
Kind of like $100,000 pyramid or $25,000 pyramid if you're older.
Oh, that's fun. If I'm an amateur expert or just an amateur.
No, I won't prove anything of the sort. It just depends on how good it is at describing.
We're just doing it.
Okay.
I love it, though.
And I have not had access to these, nor do I pay attention to crypto. So I know Bitcoin and Ether and Chia. That's about it. I think you mentioned Compound today. So.
Yeah.
That's like saying, I know the Euro and the US dollar and the Kiwi dollar.
Yes. Yes.
All right, Dan, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, there's your first one.
Okay. I want to see. Oh, I can't say that. Like, oh shit. Why did you make me the sayer? Okay. Okay. So it's like a type of music and then a shape.
Oh.
That's a terrible description.
Hold on. It's a type of music and a shape.
If I was playing an accordion, I would probably be playing this type of music.
Zydeco?
Oh my god. Wow. Okay.
Accordion.
Weird Al does a lot of.
I got it, Kyle. Okay. Weird Al plays a lot of these medleys.
Okay. Polka dot.
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
A dot is not my first thought of a shape, but yeah.
Me neither, but how else would I describe a dot? And then a really tiny circle.
Well, I mean, you could have started singing the teeny weeny yellow blank bikini is what I would have done.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right, Dan, here's your next one.
This is a type of fence.
Chain link.
Nice. All right. Yes. How about...
All right, that was a lot quicker. We're running out of time, Kyle. If I was saying the Greek alphabet, I would eventually get to this letter, this Greek letter. Oh. I don't know the Greek
Omega?
Alphabet. That would be the last one. This
iota?
One comes before it.
Is it iota?
Nope.
No. Is that a type of crypto?
Ox?
Volatility, Dan. Volatility.
Oh, yeah. This is the options term that describes the time decay.
Oh, it's not gamma, is it?
No. I could tell you all the options ones but this one, can I?
Oh, wow. Why am I?
Delta, yes, you can. Delta, Omega, Gamma, Rho, and...
I don't know why I'm not getting this one.
Alpha, Beta.
What is after Beta, the Greek alphabet?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Charlie?
I was doing the sorority chant.
Okay, that one was Theta. 2 for 3 so far.
I don't even know that coin.
Okay. So if I had an office and a secretary, I would say, if I was Scrooge McDuck and I wanted to tell my secretary to put the gold in the money bin, I might say, technically
to
she would
file be- coin.
Yes. Nice. Wow. That was a good one. All right. Last one. This one should
that was
be
a
easy.
Terrible clip.
Oh. No. Remember one time in that movie, The Matrix, that crypto coin had the leading role and its character's name was Neo?
Thank you for the low-hanging fruit on that one, though.
Well, I really wanted to work that one in there. Oh, yeah, IOTA is on here. I didn't quite get that far.
Oh, that was fun.
Great game.
I feel like I want to keep going, but...
that's going to wrap up our lovely, fantastic interview with Professor Greengard. I hope you all had a good time. I feel like I'm moderately more informed. I don't think I could go out and describe to my neighbor and have my neighbor understand yet, but I feel like my understanding has definitely grown, and I might start playing around with some of these myself, because there's a lot of fun stuff.
I feel like if we have enough of these conversations by brute force, we should learn enough to be competent.
I think the real problem is I don't have an itching, burning desire to play with crypto, so my brain resists learning about it.
I still want to understand it, but yeah, options are a lot more fun right now.
I love the idea of, like, I could program my own banking protocol and just let it run. So I am hands down looking into this to do that myself, because I remember in computer science when we had to program the bots to fight each other. I fucking love that.
Can you program it to drop the fractional decimal points and then put that into your own account?
Superman 3?
Wait, I thought it was Office Space.
Yeah, that, me too.
Oh, shit. Well, I just dated myself. Fuck.
Right.
Oh, all right.
Nerd.
Yeah, right. Oh. All right, folks. So we are going to wrap up and close the shop for the day. Sorry to kick you out. I know it's been a great time, but don't worry. We'll have shop hours open again soon. Coming back at you with a weekly episode. And then next week, I believe we got Sarah Glass going to talk about order flow, which probably applies to cryptocurrencies as well. I've noticed everything I learn about securities, you can transfer over to a crypto chart. So
I feel like we should test her flow ability too.
Yes.
Maybe some rap.
Yes. Yes.
Rap music lyrics and see if she can complete them.
We need a rap battle for her. Let's find a local rapper and have them battle Sarah. Anyway, thank you again for joining us, Alex. It has been a sincere pleasure. So glad you could make it by.
You're so welcome.
Very silly episode.
I'm glad for that.
Yeah.
Me too. It was fun.
Okay. All right, folks. Until next time, happy trades.
Bye, folks. Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.